exciting.
Welcome to PDGA Radio with Grant Zellner and Jennifer Allen as we recover from the weekend that was the 2023 Champions Cup. Jennifer, I've spoken to a number of my coworkers at the PDGA. I spent a lot of time with them on Monday before heading back home. Everybody is that good kind of exhausted. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like the weight off the shoulders, like you accomplished like this major. Yeah.
You're super satisfied with things and you know, everybody's just going up to each other and just, you did awesome. You know, it's really, really good. They'll be debriefing in the future that, you know, after literally the course gets cleaned up with all the assets, there'll be a time to sit down and go, okay, what worked, what didn't work, you know, SWOT analysis, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But for the time being, it was an incredibly wildly successful evening. I hope that came across to those that followed along. I know it did to those that were on site, just because of the comments that I heard all weekend long. But it was a really, really great weekend, I think, for the PDGA at large. And it launches us into our major season. So,
yeah, besides the fact that there was some absolute incredible golf on both sides, FPO and MPO. Mm-hmm. So you have an incredible course, ran smoothly, incredible golf. I mean, that pretty much lines up a success.
I got to wear a lot of hats over the course of the weekend personally, because we were out in the vendor village for a time and was out and sort of a part of that and, you know, getting some merchandise in place and all of that kind of thing and a lot of fan interaction, but then was out on the course doing sort of the media thing. Jen, I don't know if you caught any tournament centrals over the course of the weekend, but I did the midday editions of the tournament central show because Nate Perkins got into the Champions Cup. So his sort of duties were divided, so to speak.
He couldn't do both. I don't see why he couldn't try to play as well as interview players on the course. I think he could have done it, obviously. But I didn't really catch any. I made that tough decision to not play Champions Cup. I did have an invite, but went up to Santa Cruz to play the reunion and of Masters Cup. The age protected Masters Cup. And we had an incredible time up there. The weather really honestly couldn't have been better. I will warn, I guess, everyone going up in a few weeks for the professional Masters Cup. The oak is out and oily. It is like shining and glistering all over the course. So be prepared. The oak is out.
You're talking about poison oak?
Oh, yes.
Is that what you mean?
Never,
okay.
You've never been to De La, have you?
I have not been on the ground at De La.
Yeah. So those who have and are going know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So just be prepared. The oak is with all the rain that they've had, you know, up there. So everything was growing very well. So
nice.
But it was a great tournament they did up there as well, all doing back to shotgun start. So everyone started and finished at the same time and just that old school vibe. So it was a really good event.
Sounds like a party. Sounds like it was a lot of fun.
It was.
Before we leave the Champions Cup behind completely, I wanted to cover a few things and everything for the listener, just as kind of a wrap up. First of all, the logistics of pulling off an event of this caliber really fly under the radar. Jennifer, you know that better than most because you play in so many of these events and you see behind the curtain a lot as a player, right? Because you're on site early, not only early in the week often, but early in the morning, you know, getting ready, and you see the work that's being done. You also see year over year the work that gets done on like a facility, right? A course.
Right. Making corrections from previous events.
Yeah. Or making repairs, you know, if a storm comes through or just whatever. And I want to make sure we shout out, I could shout out dozens of people literally right now. I'm going to shout out about five in particular, but that's not at the expense of all the others whose names I don't say here, but the staff at the International Disc Golf Center, these are my colleagues, right? Patrick Graziani is based out of there. He's part of the event team. And then plus Sid Alcott, Nathaniel Samsel, Samuel Northrup, Gabe Peacock. And again, I realize there are probably so many more names I should name, but these are some of the people that were out on that property in Appling day in
before
and day out.
Before anyone else got there. Yeah.
They've been doing this for months. I remember after last year's Champions Cup hearing in the couple of days after specific things that would be done. These are the people who did that. And some of these things were not like, oh we're going to put on our work gloves and go out for the afternoon. These were weeks of work to make things happen. You know, people forget you've got to bring everything with you to these courses, because all of our favorite disc golf courses, they're either in a park, like in the middle of a city. But think about what a park is. It's like fake rural land, right? It's like a little nature nestled in the city, and it's supposed to feel like you're out in the country again or whatever in some cases, right? So parks are either that or they're actual rural areas, like where the Champions Cup is at IDGC. So you got to bring everything. And you've got to account for it when you plan. So all your power and all your water and all your food and all your communication, you know, it's all got to be digital. It's all got to be wireless. All of that stuff has to be brought. And they accounted for that masterfully. And it's expensive. And they did it on, you know, the right kind of budget. And, you know, also don't forget Nate Heinold and his whole team. I mean, it was a pretty incredible thing. And I think those on the ground really saw that. And I hope it came through on the screen as well. You know, all the overhead shots and stuff like that. So I wanted to give that shout out to things, because you'll realize once you start looking for, even this week at this side of heaven in Jonesboro, you know, you got to take everything. The course is there. The course is beautiful. The grass and the trees and all that stay there, of course, duh. But everything else.
Yeah, that was a pasture. that was farmland. There is nothing out there. But I think years after years of playing there, I think we are eliminating a few of the ticks and other things that, used to reside there.
And even that at IDGC, I mean, even the going into like improvements to the course itself, there was a lot of clearing that went on in the rough. It didn't change the rough so much from the standpoint of being offline was still penalizing to you, but it changed it from the standpoint. I noticed in particular, it was a little easier to find a disc when it went offline. It was a little easier to get a stance without having to go through, you know, those thorny vines or anything like that. I think that helped pace of play, honestly, and a lot of other things. I think it helped the vantage point for the fans, you know, going through the woods. You could kind of see through the woods and watch the play and all of that. I think that is a bit of work that went maybe a little under the radar, because you kind of had to be on site to really realize, oh, that's still thick. You still don't want to throw over there. But if you do, you can get in there. You can find your disc. You can get a stance. You can try to manufacture a way to get out. That took a ton of work.
Yeah.
Day after day with, you know, wheelbarrows and stuff.
Well, hopefully it's gonna, every year will be a little bit easier prepped and ready. That stuff doesn't grow back so quickly once it, if it's dead and pulled out. So hopefully next year it'll be a little bit easier for them, and we'll just continue to get better and better. I mean, that's what I think all TDs try to do. I think we talked about that with Nate Heinold. You know, none of his ideas were his ideas. He saw success from other events, pulled that in, and continues to build off that. So as these tournaments get fine-tuned to just absolutely incredible events, we'll just, I mean, pretty much got it all nailed down.
And before we leave, let's talk about the results, right? Kristen Tatar dominating victory, virtually doubled up the field in terms of score under par. And then you've got Isaac Robinson, you know, essentially going wire to wire, shooting the hot round, I think two separate times. There might have been someone that shot that same score with him, but, it, you know, he gets credit for the hot round at least two separate times. The scoring at W.R. Jackson, I thought, was really kind of incredible this week. And it's been talked about in some different ways. I think, you know how, Jen, you know how people always talk about holes as being a score separator? I think at W.R. Jackson, the whole course is the score separator, not right. like an individual hole or an individual characteristic, because it's not, it's long. Don't get me wrong. It's a long course, but it's not like the kind of long where it rules out a big percentage of the field that simply can't right. reach a hole. It's not that kind right. of long.
Yeah, look at Own, you know?
Yeah, Own doing... Oh,
perfect example of that.
And there's not a lot of OB on the course to speak of, so you're not going to have a ton of that kind of situation where you get score mm-hmm. separation happening. So, like I said, it's not really an individual characteristic. It's a wooded course. People talk about how, as a wooded course, it feels like it plays very fair. That doesn't mean people don't get bad kicks. But right. they sort of even you out with the line. Good kicks. Right. And it all works out. But it left a ton of different types of players in the hunt at the end. I mean, on the FPO side, you had bombers like Holland and Haley King and Kat Murch, mm-hmm. you know, all there in and around the top five. But you also had Owen Scoggins finishing right. in second. And they were all getting around the course in slightly different ways, but it felt very like fair and it felt very competitive. Right. And
that's when the distances of the holes are really thought about and put in accurately, you know, mm-hmm. because it's going to take two shots from, you know, anyone to get to that hole. So whether that be a 400-foot shot and a 100, you know, 50-foot shot, mm-hmm. whatever. That Holland and Haley might have done. Owen may have to do a couple that were a little bit longer to get to that same distance, but everyone's doing those two shots. Mm-hmm. So,
and it feels like your length is an advantage in time, which it should be. Being able to mm-hmm. throw far mm-hmm. should be an advantage in strategic situations. And it was in strategic situations. On the men's side, Eagle and Silas, right? Just, you know, they got rubber band arms, right? They can throw. Mm-hmm. But then you had Nicklaus and Mason Ford, you know, wildly different players
right.
at different ends right. of the spectrum. Players that are backhand dominant, players that can throw a forehand, you know, 500 feet. And yet here they all are jammed together at the top of the leaderboard all 4 days. So that was pretty cool.
Besides the fact, it was also neat to see new names, you know, mm-hmm. rising to the top. Silas, you know, if anyone is on social media, everyone knows he posts, you know, a ton. He's out there. He practices all the time. But we haven't seen him really contending for a title yet. So he's been around and he's practiced a lot. But this was his first really... Can you handle the pressure or are you going to buckle in the first situation, you know, of being right there at the end? So that was fun to watch as well.
Yeah, sure. And players like Kat Murch, it was her first major podium. Mm-hmm. And a cool moment with her was she didn't know it until she had been off the course for like 5 minutes. And I walked up to her and I gave her a high five and I said, you know, great job. I think maybe I was trying to get her for an interview. And it was high five, great job. And I could tell she kind of didn't know why I was standing there. I was like, you podium. She goes, I did. She flipped out. She, you know, cartwheels. I mean, if you know Kat Murch, you know that.
Yeah. But
she genuinely didn't know. And right. and then realized it's my first podium finish at a major. And that was huge for her. Just absolutely. Huge. So that was really great. On the FPO side, of course, Kristen did what Kristen did, which right. was to walk away. You know, she shot the hot round
stress
or tied.
Free.
Yeah, she shot the hot round or tied for the hot round, I think, all four rounds.
Mm-hmm.
People need to remember, though, I think, that it's not like this is the first time that's happened in an individual sport.
Right.
That has happened in sports like golf. But Tiger Woods won his first Masters by 12 over mm-hmm. the rest of the field. He won a U.S. Open a few years after that by like 15 and was the only player under par. The guy who finished second that year finished at like, I don't know, 3 over or something like that. He was,
yeah. Yeah.
So it's not unheard of. You know, you think of like a Venus Williams or someone. I'm sure that some of her, you know, grand slam championships, she only lost one or two or something games the whole tournament. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it happens. It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens. And it's really a joy to watch someone that sort of in the zone. And so that's what Kristen did. And then on the MPO side, I don't know if you caught any of the the press conference, Jen, or anything, but one of the things that was being said was with the changes to the course, people were saying, I think someone going 8 down or averaging 8 down all 4 days and getting to about 32 under par for the event, they're going to be in the hunt. And that actually ended up being true, because minus 32 would have finished fifth. And I consider fifth in the hunt for sure, just because a couple of players went under, say, 10 digits under par a couple of times doesn't mean that was an inaccurate thought. I looked it up, and so Isaac, the winner, got to 40 under, right? He went 10 or better under par 3 of his 4 rounds. So he did it 3 times.
Yeah, pretty incredible.
Pretty incredible. And players were talking ahead of time, even with this 8 under par average idea, they were saying, but people will go 10, 11, like it'll happen. Well, Isaac did it 3 times. Eagle, who finished in a tie for second, did it twice. So 2 of his 4 rounds, he did 10 under par better. Silas, who you mentioned him, he finished fourth, solo fourth. He did it twice. Simon did it twice, but had some not great rounds too. He finished in a tie for 13th. That's it. Those are the, that's all the players that went 10 under or better more than once. 4 of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nicholas went 10 under par once. 10 under par or better once. He finished in a tie for second. Matty O went 10 under par or better just once. He finished in a tie for fifth. Mason Ford never went double digits under par, and he finished in a tie for fifth. So I think it was accurate. You know, people like, oh, the course played a lot easier than we thought. I actually don't think that's the case when the statistics bear out. I think what you had is what you should expect is someone, it's like the old lottery thing. You know, you're never going to win the lottery, but somewhere someone's won it twice.
Yeah.
Just because the odds of you winning it even once are like less than the odds of you getting struck by lightning, it doesn't mean on the whole planet Earth, people playing the lottery, there's not somebody somewhere that's won it twice. That actually should be expected. And it's kind of like that. Just because the odds of going really low at W.R. Jackson aren't super great, the odds that somebody's going to do it and do it more than once, everyone should have expected that. And we got that in Isaac Robinson's performance. And so anyway, that was also just an absolute joy to watch. So it was
Isaac's weekend, right? Like he was on, and when you're on, and that showed, that was exactly what happened. And it's the same with Kristen. Kristen has continued. Gosh, I want to say what she shot 8 or 9 down every round since Texas or Tennessee. Did she start shooting like 9 down every round? I mean, she's birdieing over half the holes.
It feels like
Yeah. And she's just on her rhythm of just smooth and easy. She's not forcing anything, which I think is what is making this so, elegant, so to speak, as to win so easily, because she's not forcing it. It's just, she's in a groove. She's very confident. And that's when you can really play some great golf. It's when you try to, catch up or force, a good round that you end up OB or in the woods, right? When you're when you're forcing those shots. So she is very the cruise has been set, and she is just flying along here. And I think she's gonna stay in this rhythm for quite a while. And she's an incredible champion. She's so gracious with it. So what a great champion for us to have and to look up to right now on the FPO side. And this is at a time when our talent is deeper than it's ever been, right? The numbers of incredible players and all the new FPO players that are stepping up, so she is doing this at a time, I think, that the FPO talent is greater than it's ever been. So I think that needs to be acknowledged as well. You know, not only is she dominating, but she's dominated at a time that she's really having to overcome some incredible golf.
Well, and I'm looking at the top 10 from this week. You had Owen in there. You had Kat Murch, already mentioned her first podium. Katrina Allen, you know, is in a point in her career where on her not best week, she's still a best type player. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
She's built consistency so well. Mm-hmm. Haley King has gotten over some injuries and things, and Haley King is showing up. Holland Handley is knocking on the door, and is a joy to watch. Jessica Weiss is an example
had a great
of a player
year.
She's had a great year, and it's kind of flown under the radar a little bit. And we're going to see her name tons on leaderboards. Mm-hmm. Your compatriot, Sarah Hokum, top 10, also kind of one of those models of consistency, you know,
absolutely,
almost sort of own like she's
because we're master players.
I know. Like, not necessarily super likely to shoot the hot round on any given day, but is likely to put together multiple consistent rounds in a row. And you know, and then you've got players like Henna, you know, that has sort of all, you know, not all the tools, but is trying to get that last tool in her toolbox.
Oh,
you know?
She has all the tools. she definitely has all the tools. It's just, you know, her and Evelina, I don't think have really gotten their true rhythm this year. You know, they trained really hard. They probably trained more this offseason than they ever have. And rather that be that put more pressure on them, you know, internally to do better, that they haven't really got into their groove this year, but definitely have all the talent it takes for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And when they're hot on the putting green, when they get that part going to go with those monster drives.
Yeah. They usually don't have to putt when they're on.
I know.
they're usually throwing it in from everywhere.
I know. That's incredible. So yeah. And Ella Hansen topped out in 10th, and we all have seen what Ella can do to a disc golf course, you know, when she's on fire. So that's just the top 10. There are names just outside the top 10 that we know that are champions on the pro tour. So,
well, I love all the new names that continue to bounce in and out, you know, Macy in Tennessee, and then Hannah at Blue Ridge. And, you know, you're getting more and more newer names at the top. They've been around, but they just haven't really been that consistent, like you talked about, like all the names that you listed, that we consistently see those names. But there's a lot of, you know, new names that are really battling towards the top. And I think that's the super exciting part for me.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. On the men's side, it's the same story. Nicholas Antala, right? Silas, we already talked about. Aiden Scott had an incredible run this past week, and that will not be his first. He will continue to
maybe his first, but it won't be his last.
It won't be his last, right? Yuna was in the hunt. Anthony Barella
had a great start to this year as well.
So, and then you mix in other guys that, you know, that we know and that have even won. Mason Ford, Matty O's been around forever. Chris Clemens, right? Showing up for the lefties right there. So shout out to Chris representing the lefties. And the list goes on. So, what's going to happen, I wonder, between now and, I mean, we've got Euro Open as the next major. And that's that's 3 months away, which feels...
Yeah, that feels like eternity, but it'll be here
like
in a
long time. Yeah, you've got the Euro Open, and then you've got another month and a week after that before Worlds, and then you've got another, you know, basically month and a week after that before USDGC, and also USWDGC is pretty close to USDGC this year. So both the men's field and the women's field sort of playing a similar major schedule. And so in the 3 months, I guess this is a great place to land the plane and leave Champions Cup behind, Jen. In the 3 months between now and Worlds, what what's going to happen?
A lot of golf, a lot of golf. The schedule is just completely stacked. I know I've got a few more kind of around here, but then like all of May will be on the West Coast.
Yeah, the left coast over there.
And us master players have a few more majors, mm-hmm. Before then. So we have our next major is, our first major of the year for some of them. I believe is at the end of May with the U.S. Masters out in Eugene.
Tim Sklinski. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then Masters Worlds is
In July.
July. Okay.
Mid July. There. Yeah. And so in between there, USAM and the AM and Junior Worlds are in there in between.
Yeah. Yeah. But look, I mean, look, like you mentioned, Owen and Sarah, you know, and myself, you know, we're playing both. So mm-hmm. it definitely, when you're at that, and there's several of the men who do it as well, when you're at that point in your career that you can still compete. And I mean, again, Owen took second against the FPO players. Mm-hmm. So you're competing, you know, equally well in FPO or in the age protected divisions. That's a lot of majors.
Right.
So it makes for a really busy schedule for us that play both sides of it.
So between now and Worlds and all of those events in between that you mentioned, some other majors for Masters players and a full slate of DGPT events, you know, questions that I have that I want to write down. I'm not going to make any predictions, but I want to write. I'm not, but I want to write them down because I can't wait to see what the answer is. Who that we're not talking about will we be talking about in the approach to Worlds?
Okay.
You know, and again, yeah, I'm not saying this is a prediction, but is, you know, will we right. be talking about Paul McBeth again even more? Will we be talking about another young player that maybe isn't even on our radar right now? Mm-hmm. And we'll look back and go, well, you know, they finished 20th at Champions Cup that we should have been talking about. You know, are we going to talk about them? Yeah. Same thing on the women's side. So who are we not talking about now that we'll be talking about then? God forbid who might be dealing with injury or something by then because of the grind of mm-hmm. the summer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Maybe hopefully by then we'll be recovered or something. They'll pattern their recovery to try to be ready for Worlds or whatever. So who will have to deal with those kinds of off the course issues? That's another question. And then, you know, maybe a third question is, by the time we get to Worlds in Vermont, what other topic, who knows what it would be, will be, you know, something that we're talking about? Will it have to do with equipment? Will it have to do with course setup? Will it have to do with, you know, will it be a rule that something happens and all of a sudden that's the flavor of the month and we're talking about a certain rule?
Yeah.
I don't know, but
I think we'll definitely continue to throw in new names. That's for mm-hmm. sure. And we will have the consistent names that you mentioned that will be there because that's just it. They have mastered the game enough to be consistent to where, like you said, with Kat, even on a bad day, she's still going to be beating people who are having a good day.
Mm-hmm.
So we will have those consistent great players in the mix for sure. But I do believe that we will continue to see new names at the top every single week, just a new mixture of players because the talent has grown to that level. So it will be interesting and fun, and it's going to be a jam-packed, incredible year for sure.
So reluctantly, but with eyes looking forward with a lot of excitement, we leave W.R. Jackson behind. We leave the International Disc Golf Center behind. The Champions Cup 2023 in the books as a success and a joy to have been a part of and to watch. I have already been going back and rewatching different segments of it, and I will continue to do that. But we leave it behind. And here on PDGA Radio and at the PDGA in general, we start to focus right now for a season on, like you said, the Masters majors, mm-hmm. the Junior Major. We're going to be focused on that in a big way, and we're excited about that. And so get some sleep.
Stay tuned. Yeah.
We've got some guests already lined up and some other ones in the works, and we are going to be back on PDGA Radio very, very shortly. So until then, see ya.
Bye.